This is not just any podcast. This is Chew the Fat, sponsored by Marks and Spencer, celebrating 40 years in Ireland.
This week we have someone we've long had on our wish list to chat to, as we've loved their product for absolutely ages. Inch House Black Pudding was introduced to us in the days well before we started Gastrogaze, and when we see it in the shops, we instantly place it into our basket.
Maureen Byrne, who took over operations from her mother Nora back in 2016, is the fantastic woman behind this product and its continued success here in Ireland. We popped down to her production unit in the town of Templemore, County Tipperary, to chew the fat and to finally meet in person.
Well, hello!
Welcome to the house. How are things?
Finally, I know! Finally meet!
Welcome.
Thank you.
I told you this wasn't fancy.
Oh my god, I love it though.
It's all that we need.
Yeah.
Small space.
Perfect. It's very small.
Oh, it's
perfect.
Perfect.
One hand has scones and chat, and the other hand has lovely fresh blood.
I can't tell the difference.
Well, look, it's pork blood, right? So it's a bit different to beef blood, and definitely different to powder blood.
Absolutely.
So powder blood would be reconstituted with water, whereas literally we go to the factory, we collect the fresh blood on a Friday, and it's all gone by Monday.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So.
And is it from
crows?
No, it's actually from a small abattoir in North Cork. Crows actually don't kill their own pigs anymore, but that's just, they stopped last year. So they send their pigs now to this guy, so that's where the connection came.
So kind of is, like, still.
It is. Well, now, in fairness, they rear their own pigs as well, and that's where they send them. It just wasn't economical enough for them with the number they were killing. So, but anyway, the guys, Finns are fantastic. They look after me really well.
I mean, it is such an intense colour.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
What happens is, like, I suppose you have to keep mixing it so it doesn't coagulate and so on. But the colour, if you smell it there as well, like, the smell is quite strong.
Oh, yeah.
But they're actually young pig's blood. So older pigs would have, like, sows or older pigs would have very strong, potent blood, whereas a young pig would have quite pinky colour, fresher blood,
And as a smell, it's quite a familiar smell too. I suppose if you're getting really fresh meat,
it's
that smell,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly.
It's nothing. It's not like it's like, oh god.
It's a clean smell
of like a classic craft butcher's.
Exactly. If you open up any piece of nice fresh meat that you get from the butcher's,
You
put it on your plate to ready, leave it warm to room temperature or something, that little bit of blood left on the plate, that's the smell you'll get, if you're trying to imagine what it'll smell like.
And actually, this reminds me, we had an amazing butcher's when we lived in London, called Flock and Herd in Peckham. And because hard to find good butchers around our part of London in particular. And I remember getting pork chops one time, and they had fantastic quality pork. And I remember smelling it going, what is this? This is weird. And you were like, that's called quality and freshness. Not something we were used to around those parts. And very similar to that.
And we use pinhead oats from Flavins. These guys here, look.
Yeah.
It's actually what it is. It's cut oats.
Oh,
so you won't find whole, you shouldn't find a whole piece of oats. They're quite small, actually, those ones. But they actually, it's a special technique. They cut the oat in half. And in that sense, then, it's actually easier for me to cook with, because it holds the, it soaks up all the lovely juice. And the blood and everything, it absorbs it quite quickly rather than cooking it whole. If you cook the oats whole, it would take way too long to break the grain down and everything would burn. So that steel cut oats, and that's traditional in this part of the country to make pudding with. Some places would use pearl barley, and they'd have other things that they might use. Like in France, of course, the boudin, the famous black pudding, they use no grain.
Yes.
So it's all the blood and the onion and spices or whatever they put in. And Spain a little bit as well, but again, it depends on the area you're in as what they use. But this area would be, you might have seen on the way down, lots of fields of grain and so on.
And that's the beauty of black pudding, is that every country, or at least a lot of European countries in particular, have their own version.
They do,
and it's such a representation of their own country, and Inch House is such a great representation of Irish black pudding.
It's a very country thing.
Yes.
And the way I see it is I'm a custodian, because I suppose the old traditions are quick and fast disappearing. Simple things that every housewife did in the countryside. They all killed their own meat and they all processed their own meat right there in their own kitchen table. And they had to be industrious. Yeah. Where did they go to do their shopping? They didn't. They shopped it. They went to shopping once or twice a year, and sure, you know, that was it. They got their flour and their sugar every time they went to town and all the bits, but they made everything else. Yeah. And so it's same with Granny, my own grandmother. That's her there. She was 97 when she passed away, Mary Ryan, a real mountainy woman and so industrious. Yeah. That woman could make anything. She used to make all her children's clothes and everything. She was just magic, yeah, and she had 13 of them.
Wow. Whoa.
Busy woman.
Busy with all those clothes.
Yeah. Very busy.
Yeah.
So that's really, I suppose, it isn't off the ground we licked it. You have to kind of, I suppose, she was so industrious and she was so practical. It passed on to her children, and my mam is in the middle of the 13, was a nurse by trade. When we bought Inch House, we had to actually make use of the land and the house and everything to make it a viable option, because it was a wreck and we had to do it up and all the rest of it. And so Mam and Dad started out with the land, working on that first, tried to get a bit of money in, and then Mam was baking at the time for all the local shops out of the basement of the house, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and baking before we went to school, that kind of thing. And then, hard work. No fear of her. Like, she was ready and willing. And then we started the guest house in 1989.
Yes.
Guess what year he's born?
I wonder.
A right year.
Well, I was, I'm a few years older than you, but I was 9 at the time. So we opened the restaurant we opened the guest house in 1989, and we opened the restaurant then in 1994. Mm. Out of a demand for people that were staying, and just it developed, just organically grew into something that stayed open until last year. So what Mom and Dad are doing now, they've retired. I've taken over this part of the business, which is the black pudding part. And they have kept the main house for themselves. They rent it out to groups and couples and families and birthdays and anniversaries and tourists, just for any length of time, 2 to 5 nights or a week or whatever. And that is just suits them perfect. And my mom is tipping away at that, and my dad is tipping away at the farm still, my brother, his son. And they're doing cutting corn last week and driving the combine, and he's happy out. So they've never had so much time.
Yeah.
Went hurling at the weekend, and they're staying out now next week for the final. Wonderful. And all the rest. Yeah. So
it's a pure Irish country life, isn't it?
It's so simple. And to be honest with you, look, it's hard work.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Starting your own business and starting from scratch. Now, I mean, I started from scratch, but without Mom and Dad, their support, first and foremost, because they were the ones that started the production side of things in the kitchen when the recession hit in 2009. We had to start something just to try and generate more cash flow. And I suppose it was a natural progression, because we always made the black pudding for the menu for guests, like say that we'd make it every now and then and just put it on as specials or whatever.
Yeah.
So Mom just got a brainwave. Listen, we need to do something different to try and get some more money coming in. And again, her industrious brain kicked in, and she remembered Granny, like, would have always, I suppose, made the pudding. And we thought, well, maybe we get that story and kind of build on it and grow on it. And it just took off then locally, and people wanted to buy it locally. And we just said, right, okay, let's go at it. And we did. And we did a lot of shows and Bloom and craft fairs and all those things in the start. And Mam and me. But again, all the hard work paid off then when I went to take over. I had a really good brand kind of built up over that time. And we started making it in 2009, and I took over in 2016. So I'm on my own EO since. Yeah, and it's going really well.
The square shape is quite iconic. Is that a traditional thing, or is it just your thing?
No, it's actually the way my grandmother made it.
Really?
So she never actually, and most people when they're listening, they may have had, if they talk to their grandparents, they'll talk about going down to the stream and cleaning the intestines in the stream, yeah. And because they didn't have, a lot of people didn't have running water and so on, so they would have, most houses had a little stream beside their home washing the intestines, whereas my grandmother hated that part of the job, so she never actually used the intestine. And what she used to do is put it into like a cake tin or a biscuit tin or whatever she had, put it into a pot, into a big vat of water, and sit it down into it and cook it like that over the fire. And that's why we kept the square shape rather than the, yeah, the intestine. So.
And so could have gone on a, well, back in the 15th century, it was traditions like she didn't like cleaning intestines. As simple as that.
She wasn't a big fan.
Industrious. Yeah. It's like I'll use exactly what I've got.
Yeah. And she just didn't have time either because it's so time consuming. To do that, to go ahead and like sit in the stream and clean it. Usually it was a kid's job.
Yeah.
And there's so many people I meet at tastings and so on talking about, you know, oh, I remember my own grandmother and my own mother doing it or whatever. And I just said, yeah. And she said, I told them we don't use it for that reason. And it's just like, that would be so much handier if we'd have known that. You know.
Who needs intestines anyway?
I suppose that's the tradition. And you see it there across Europe, people are using... Now, I suppose a lot are using the synthetic casings now, and it's very handy and everything. But again, you're eating synthetic, you know, rather than the natural food that would have been the original recipe, you know. So again, I'm just trying to keep it really simple. Really, really, like you can see that's what's in it.
Yeah.
There's no artificial additives, preservatives, flavors. It's literally some pinhead, some little bit of rice, onions, salt, pepper, spices. It's my secret spice mix. You can't tell you what's in that. Little bit of everything. Have a good smell of that there. It's a really cool pepper smell and spices, salt, little bit. What do you smell, do you think?
All spice.
Yeah, a little bit of mixed spice.
Lovely.
It is pungent.
Yeah.
But it is, but when you mix that into, we make them all by hand on the pot, on the hob. Okay. So we mix everything by hand, wooden spoon, pot.
Amazing.
We do four pots at a time, and then we fill them into molds. These kind of guys here.
And you say four pots at a time, and there is four pots, four hobs, and that's it.
That's it.
Like, it is as simple as that. It's not because that's all you fancy doing, it's because that's all you can do
here.
That's
all we fit, that's literally it. And it's a one-person show, so there's not enough, I suppose, for me, there's not enough in it to justify having somebody full-time standing there doing it, so... Do one person part-time doing it, and then, you know, I do the rest. And it's working quite well. There's more capacity there as well to do it still, and still have lots left over, lots of space left over. That's the mould we use.
Iconic.
Yeah, iconic. But that's the simple... That's a Le Creuset mould. Now, we have other ones there as well, but that's a really old-fashioned one. But it's really... The weight in it and everything. But that's the traditional... pate or terrine molds, and it works quite well, you know, they just sit
in.
So simple. Again, it's all about using what we had at the time when we started. We had, for the restaurant, we would, you know, we'd make a terrine or pate or whatever, and that's how, just whatever we had. Again, being industrious, we had to just, instead of spending a whole load of money on a whole load of different new stuff, we have one vacuum packer of a chiller that's about 25 years old. It sounds like an engine of a jet taking off, but it does the job, you know. And we just you just have a system. We have a flow going. We just keep it really tight, you know.
And how long does the whole process take?
From start to finish, let me see. So probably take cooking process and the cooling all about maybe 3 hours for one batch, 3.5 hours. And then after that, then you have to go and you have to pack it and hand packed. It's all hand packed, it's all hand labeled. It's very agricultural looking, really, in one sense, compared to some, but it's made with love, you know.
And that's so visible because, you know, we see it and we know a lot of the story anyway, because we've known you for quite a few years. And it just lights up our eyes when we see it in shops and stuff, because we know and understand, and hopefully listening to this understand the process involved, that there's so much love and attention put into it, and it is such a lovely family story too. It's really lovely,
and it also isn't everywhere as well, so anytime you see it, it's special. It's like oh, they've got Inch House here. Oh my God, wow.
Yeah,
we don't sell everywhere. Yeah. And to be honest with you, lads, we won't ever sell everywhere. Mm. We can't. The way our production is set up, we keep it to small batches made to order. Mm. So every Monday morning, I ring all the customers. We get all the orders. Some come in over the weekend on a Friday maybe, or you know, they give me a ring or leave voicemails or whatever. And come 12 o'clock Monday, we know exactly what everybody wants. We make that. We start making Monday morning around 6 o'clock, but we kind of have a fair idea of what we need every week. And then we just go from there, and everything is just filled and gone usually by Wednesday afternoon, kind of Thursday morning. Yeah. And then usually Thursday or Friday, I'm out on the road doing a tasting somewhere or meeting customers or traveling somewhere to the factory or wherever, you know, to the abattoir or something. Yeah. You know, so I'm on the road pretty 3 days a week, pretty much, you know. So it's like, you won't see me in every Tesco or Dunn's, or you know, it's specialized shops that are willing to give us a go. And I mean, in fairness, we've been very lucky with some of the restaurants that have been putting it on, and some of the hotels, with they've been really, really good to us, and realizing what goes behind the product. It really means a lot to us then to get a picture on your phone from somebody to say, wow, look, I found your pudding on the menu somewhere, you know, and that means so much. I won't name drop because I'll leave somebody out, you know, and I wouldn't dream of doing that. But there have been some really great supporters, and they know who they are.
Yeah.
Some have featured on your podcast.
And
more.
As a small scale producer,
yes,
it can be quite a cutthroat industry, and we have experiences speaking to the small guys and then speaking to the chains and supermarkets over the years. How do you, as a small scale producer, find the supermarkets?
Okay, that's a tricky one. The independently owned supermarkets are fantastic. I have been very lucky. Again, I hate name dropping, but I have to tell you, some of them are just with me since I started.
Yeah.
So the likes of Arkeen Stores. Now, I mean, you couldn't find a better store. Colin and the lads down there, Brendan on the butcher's counter, they're all class. Yeah. They know what they're doing, you know, and they love what they do. Our Avoca have been one of our best customers since we started. So again, it's all grown organically from there. I mean, when we started, we got one of the stores, and then, you know, moved out into the other stores. And just it's little and often is what I find. I don't want to go into every store and just not be able to supply them, and then, you know, for it not to sell. I want to just grow it organically in all the stores that we're in. So a number of the larger supermarket chains have approached me on numerous occasions asking me to go and produce for them under their own brands or different things. I've declined them all, but not because I'm being snobby about it, not because I don't want to grow my business, but I want to do it in a way that I want to do it, not the way they want to do it. And I want to do it on my terms. And I think maybe I'm being a bit naive, maybe I should go and do that, but if I move too fast, too quick, I don't want to be a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
I want to be here in 10, 15 years' time to hand it over to my own children as a sustainable business, rather than go in, bang, 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 3 or 4 times a year into different supermarkets, get the volume out, but lose that essence of the brand and what I'm trying to do. And I might have to change my recipe and move things around a little bit. And not really keen on that. Maybe I'm being naive. I don't know. I think I'm just trying to be true to what the story is and the product.
And because it is your story and your family's story, it's understandable to want to hold that as dear as possible to you and to hold it on for generations to come. And I think that's a worry that a lot of people, when we talk to people, especially when we go to things like the Blossom Heron Awards, for example, and you're talking to so many producers, so many are not afraid of expanding or wanting to expand. They just simply go, I don't want to. I'm happy. I have a lovely career. I have a lovely life. I get to do the thing I love to do every day. I don't necessarily want to become this big international conglomerate. I just want to make a good product, make some money, and have a, as you say, a sustainable business.
Absolutely. And that's exactly where I'm at. Yeah. I just don't want to having to go out and spend 200,000 and building a new unit somewhere, which I might have to do anyway because I'm renting this property presently. But, you know, I might have to do something similar, but I want to do it on my terms, you know, and in my own way when I can afford to and all those kind of things. You know, it's not something I'm attracted to, the high glamour life of a multinational company or a huge big business, you know. Yeah.
Which
has PLC. Oh, yeah. My worst nightmare. Oh my god. No. Well, I have three smallies. Do you know what? They're not small. The biggest is 11, and the next one 9 and 5. But listen, I'm my own boss. I can take a half day when I want to take a half day. I can plan my day so that we go. I was working yesterday. Went home. Got to dinner. Went to a football match. Came back home. Got them showered and into bed, and then came back to work. You know, so I was here till 1 o'clock this morning, but that's just the odd time that happens, and I can do that. I can do it because it's my business. I can do what I want. And then other days, then I can just take 3 or 4 days off. You know, so once I plan everything and do it in my way, so and I want to have them something to hand over to, and they might tell me, "Shove it! I don't want it. Why would I want to work like the way you've worked?" But maybe they'd say, "Well, actually, that'd be a really good." I think that'd be a really good business to take on, and maybe I could do this, this, and this, and let them decide if they want to make it bigger or grow it. And I'm not saying I don't want to get bigger in my own sense and grow my sales and all the rest, but do it in the way that I want to do it.
Of course, at your terms,
yeah.
Your time.
I'm the boss.
Yeah.
And so you took over 3 years ago?
Just about, yeah.
How had you known that it was worth it?
I didn't. I really didn't. I didn't have a clue. That's not true. I did have a clue. I had an idea of what was coming in and what sales and what was going out. But because the business pudding part was actually connected with the restaurant and the way the business was set up with the dad and farm and everything, it was very difficult to try and really pin down costings and so on. So I did my best on that before we started and just kind of said, well, look, I think I can grow it. You know, to a really sustainable level, earn money. My husband's self-employed as well. He's working. You know, we're fine. I don't know. I was nuts, really. I actually think I'm not well in the head sometimes the way I take these things on. But I really wanted a change. I really needed a change in my life. I was in Inch in the restaurant for 12 years with my parents, and we were working really well together. But I just felt, you know, I wanted to try something new, and this really, I had been doing it all along, but it wasn't mine. So now it's really my own, and I can do what I want to do with it. So it's working. I hope, fingers crossed. Yeah.
Are you aware that you're a part of the continuation, or I guess the evolution of the storyline of Irish food?
I suppose in my own little way, yes, I am, but there's so many of us out there, you know, and I suppose maybe Irish people are kind of lost a little bit in the fact that not all Irish consumers are, but I think a lot of them have come around to the fact that we need to preserve these things. We've kind of become a different, I don't know what the word is now, but the society has changed so much in the last 10, 15 years with the technology and everything, and everything's so instant that people have lost maybe touch slightly with the past. And I think it's important to hold on to it in some ways and then look to the future. You can't ignore what's happened, and tradition is important to me. So that's what I'm trying to do. But yes, I would say that all of us little food producers are doing something special to maintain the history and build on it and grow on it and tell our children where food comes from and tell people where food comes from, because a lot of people have forgotten where food comes from. You know, unless you're in the food industry, you really do take things for granted. Simple things, you know, bread even, like simple thing, like, you go to the shop, you pick up bread and milk. Do children really understand where that food comes from? Simple things, you know. And I'm lucky enough, in this area, we're surrounded by farms, surrounded by farming community. So we're very lucky that way, that we have maybe a bit more grounded. The younger generation are slightly more grounded in that sense, that they see it every day. You can't but see tractors up and down the road with silage and, you know, milk dairy trucks and cows crossing the road and, you know, those kind of things. So you can't get away from it. So unless they're living in their phones, which they possibly are sometimes, they get, you know, they do get a little bit more down, I suppose, down the country, inverted commas, a little bit more maybe base as to where food comes from, you know. Oh, I forgot that we had that in the oven.
Hello.
Well done, black pudding.
Oh, well.
Oh, my God. Too busy talking.
You're listening to Chew the Fat, sponsored by Marks & Spencer Ireland.
We're just going to take a second here to point out the incredible value of some of Marks & Spencer wines in Ireland right now. So what are we working with here budget-wise?
About €8?
€8? Choose between Burra Brook Pinot Grigio and Cabernet Sauvignon, or Gold Label Chardonnay and Cabernet Sauvignon as well. Would you believe when we met all these years ago, your go-to drink was a chilled Pinot Grigio?
And yours was a rich, spicy Cab Sav. How times have changed, and yet we haven't really changed at all either.
Also in that same deal is the Tierra y Hombre Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir. Really, really recommend trying out Pinot Noir if you haven't before, especially if you're not usually a red drinker. It's a wonderful entry grape. Trust us on this one.
We're off to invest in a few now. As ever, please drink responsibly. And for more information, see in store at Marks & Spencer or log on to marksandspencer.ie.
There, yeah, throw on a bit of apple chutney there. It's nice as well. Take your tea bag as well.
Oh, we just stop. We're normally in a field or something, so it's fine.
Oh, God.
Yeah. All sorts.
Mm. Do you like strong or weak tea?
I like strong. So.
Strong.
It is so good.
You hear the tractor going on behind
you. Yeah. So this unit obviously was a butcher's.
It was. Mm. Yeah, the lady that owns it, her husband actually was a butcher here, and he used to kill all the animals out the back.
Oh, wow.
Most butchers did.
Yeah.
So, he was a nice man. I remember him. He passed away a few years ago, but she still owns the premises, and her sons are actually butchers as well. So, I'll have to look up the O'Shea's in London. They has a butcher shop in London. So.
Mm.
Yeah.
They were always at that market that we always went to that I can never remember the name of.
They also own a place in Brussels, right?
Yeah. So their dad actually owned this.
No way.
Yeah. So, but terribly nice.
That's
people.
A small world.
Yeah.
Terribly nice people.
And I'm just kind of, you know, suddenly you say something, you go, "Oh my God, it all makes sense now."
I know. I heard of that in Brussels before.
Yes. So their mum, I deal with their mum here. She still owns the premises.
Excellent.
So she let me rent it for a couple of years and. See how long.
Perfect.
I'm here. I don't know how long, but it's worked out pretty well so far.
Yeah.
Just when you're starting out on your own, it's great to get a little start and a little
Absolutely.
Help. So in fairness to her, she's been great. Yeah.
So when you were saying to us in our messages about coming down, you were like, oh, it's just a little production unit. I love
it's
this.
A butcher shop.
You know,
it's
in Dublin.
Full on proper tile, proper flooring.
You know, in Dublin, butcher shops become wine bars, you know.
That's
so
very true. It's a very strange place, some of them butcher shops. They're just... changed the scene completely, haven't they? It's a dynamic kind of a business now. You have to move with it or you're kind of and you know, sometimes I like going into the old style butcher shops, you know, where the dust is on the floor, and there's some really cool ones like that as well around, and they have really good meat, so I like them too. I do like a wine bar sometimes.
Everything
I'm not exclusive.
It's been a while since I was in one, but yes.
So I'm currently eating now the white pudding.
Yes.
Now.
Go for it.
What's the difference?
Well,
other than the colour.
Very, very simple. The black pudding has blood. The white pudding has pork meat. Simple as that. The white pudding we make has a lot more grain. Well, not a lot more, but it has pinhead oats, but it also has rolled oats. And that's just a recipe we developed over time. Same mix of spice and all the rest, but exactly. It's simple. But we put in some bacon lardons into the white pudding just to add a little bit more texture. And look, the by far, like, I love the white pudding in a breast of chicken, for example. Yeah. Like, it's delicious wrapped in a bit of streaky bacon and mushroom, creamy mushroom sauce or something like that. That's my favorite food. Like, all the family will eat that. So it's great. But the black pudding is by far the most popular, just for the texture and the flavor and so on. And again, not too spicy. You know, it won't overpower your fish, it won't overpower your meal. It's not going to repeat on you. It's one of those simple kind of foods that you can use in lots of different things. Some people love it in a scotch egg. I know you too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I know you've tried that one.
Yeah.
We've been lucky.
Anything with a deep fryer, in fairness.
Well, it is your niche at the minute. Anything fried, he is like, yes. I'm all over that, 100%. Yeah. And in terms
of
you...
No
way.
I threw my deep fat fryer
out.
Not that you think it, but I have one of those air fryers.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Now, not that it's fancier or anything, but I actually like it because I cook everything in it. I even do waffles in it. Some people think I'm
morning.
Nuts. I saw the little, there's a mad wave of waffles at the moment. The kids see the ad on the telly and they love the song.
Yeah.
So I stop, get out
marketed
my head.
To the heavens at the minute
and,
as well. So
and
it's like
they now add avocado to it, according to the ad. It's like, oh, millennials, it's got a grist.
Some sausages and beans. That's it.
A few beans. Yeah. Can't beat it. Yeah, absolutely.
Although, never on a fry.
No.
Ever.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
You couldn't put waffles on a fry.
Or beans.
Oh, God, no.
Beans. No.
Well, I wouldn't put beans on anything. Only maybe I put them on a spud, or I put them on some waffles, maybe. Yeah. Oh. Be, or toast, maybe.
Yeah.
But not in a fry. No.
Oh, God, no.
I agree.
Notions.
In terms of your customer, is it more consumer or chef?
Actually, would you believe more chefs lately, in the last 6 to 8 months, it's kind of grown quite well. And I was aiming to do that this year. I had kind of in my head that I wanted to grow the food service side of things a little bit more. Now, don't get me wrong, it's still 60-40. So retail is it's really important to me. I don't get me wrong, but the food service side is great. Now, it is a lot handier for me, food service. Just, it's a lot less packaging, it's a lot less handling. Do you know, you don't, time consuming, especially when you're on your own. But saying that, the retail is really cool. Now, it's very time consuming, the retail, because you have to do the tastings in store and so on, but I don't mind. I love meeting people.
Yeah.
Brings me back to my restaurant days.
Of course.
Back to the old days. Yeah, but the retail is important. I suppose that's possibly where there's more money.
Sorry, my mouth full of black pudding. Surprise, surprise.
As ever.
I suppose as well, the advantage of, you're saying about the sales through food service, and it's a lot of it is word of mouth, which is usually a lot of it is through the internet. Mm-hmm. That's how we met, it's through the internet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so many chefs are becoming personalities in their own right online and are therefore able to elevate so many producers throughout the country as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really wonderful use of it, because I suppose in our other guise as social media kind of consultants and managers and the likes, we're always trying to say about, you know, organic content and promotional content, and trying to have the two. And so many chefs are like, I'm not promoting my restaurant here, I'm not promoting my menu, I'm promoting the products and the producers who help me make my restaurant and my menu as good as possible.
The best way to go, isn't it, really? You know, I mean, a typical Irish, if we put down the man, but we wouldn't, you know, you put the person down, say, oh, look at that lad, he thinks he's great or whatever, put saying this, this and this. But if he's actually promoting other people, then you say, well, fair play to him, you know. So it's an Irish thing, I think. It's in our psyche, just, you know, put somebody else down. It's just, you know. But
slap them up, pick them up
with
the same hand.
Exactly. So in fairness now, you're right. In like, for me, I see it, so many chefs, okay, fine, they're on social media. Some are not on social media, and they are just really putting it out there on the menus. It's the menus. And again, like I said earlier, I get numerous every week I get texts from either friends or other people on social media saying, look, I found it here or I found it there. And sometimes I don't even know what's on those menus because, you know, I deal with LaRousse Foods and they would send it out to God knows where. And I wouldn't even know where it's going. So that way it's nice, you know, to be able to say, yeah, wow, that's really cool that those people have it and they're putting it out there and they're telling people and they're sharing the story. And, you know, that means so much to me, you know. And I said, I need those people so much to do that for me because I'm so small. I don't have a marketing budget, no more than yourselves. Where do you get the money to do the promotion? Just you have to... I suppose word of mouth is everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those chefs do it.
I suppose the kind of word of mouth thing is something that Brian McDermott, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks back, he said, my marketing strategy is it's my next customer. Yeah. And I think it's a really lovely way of looking at things because, you know, I don't know, we've said about you're putting to many people over time and and it has helped continue that kind of story along and helped the promotion of it. We've given it just to people. It's like they're in our house going, that looks lovely. It's like, here you go then. They're like, do you not want it? It's like, no, I want you to have it. I really do want it, but you should have it because I can't. Yeah, because it makes sense to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's sharing is caring. One of my things was when the restaurant was there, you know, you get all these rewards and you get all these praise or whatever. You're only as good as your last meal, you know, and you can only, it's the same with the pudding, you know. Sometimes you feel like you're throwing your hat at it and you say, you're only as good as the last pot of pudding that's been made and gone out, you know, and it can, and okay, we're at the stage now where we have a good system and we, you know, we're pretty consistent and everything, but you just never know, like, you can only do your best and keep plugging away at it and keep the standards up as best you can. And like what Brian said, like, you know, just your next customer is the person that look after the ones you have, but you know, always be open to new customers as well, you know, and they're the ones that'll make you a few pounds.
Yeah, you know. How has Irish cuisine changed in your eyes over the years? Are we evolving or are we appreciating and honouring craft more?
I don't know. Honouring craft, yeah, fine, to a point. I'd say more appreciative of the food that we're producing, maybe more so than the craft of it, because you know we've always had the craft. The craft has always been there. If you're going to grow something or make something, or you know, it's the finished product that we need to that we're appreciating a bit more. I think, you know, just from the trade, from my own experience, if you put the good ingredients in, you get the good food out. You know, like down to a simple thing like the type of beef you use, the steak you cut, what way you cut it, how it's cut, you know, fine. But it's really important to maintain that appreciation for your ingredients. And I think definitely it has changed a lot, the quality. Now, there are still some awful places that use really bad ingredients. Mm-hmm. And you can see that. Even this morning there was something up, you know, that picture that you put up about... what was it, you know, that...
Oh, God, what was that?
The little...
They look like a vollivant gone wrong.
Yeah, I don't want to say the name of the place, but, yeah, the it looked like rubber. Yeah. I don't know what it looked like.
Raw vollivants.
I think it was raw, though.
Oh, it looked awful now. And, I mean, and do people think that's food? Yeah. I mean, you have to... I don't think Irish people would put up with that.
No. I think it was American. So that's fine.
No, it was American. I don't believe Irish people... The food here is, in my opinion, way up there. Mm. You know, I mean, we have great quality food. Mm. Again, it depends on where you go. Obviously, you know, certain places that you might go for a sandwich on the way to an interview or something.
Yeah, like Subway en route at Port Leash, yeah.
Stop. Certain places, you know, the quality of the ingredients could be questioned at times. Not, I think you have to just, people have maybe copped on a bit more to... You know, what's good and what's not, you know, I think so.
And if not, it's a movement that's slowly getting there, I think. And I think it's because I think we're beneficial because it's very trendy to be going to your markets now. You know, I see the Fumbly market of a Saturday in Dublin and, you know, it's like, I remember when we moved back from London, it was like, God, I can't get sourdough everywhere. I can't move for the stuff nowadays, you know.
It could still be more places. I want more of it, but...
Yeah, and
it is like hugely growing.
Mm. Everyone has their own like kimchi supplier. You know, it's like we've given up on things like that. We're all more now.
There's no kimchi suppliers down here. opening there for you now. Yeah, sort that.
Templemore kimchi, perfect.
No, it has a ring to it now. It does. It does.
But I suppose then it kind of, that would let then lead into the difference of like, you know, there is a split between rural and urban Ireland in a lot of ways. A lot of the producers around Ireland are in, you know, in the farms, in the rural towns, and then the restaurants are in Dublin, and it's talking about locality and everything like that. Now, you're not local to Dublin, but you're a prominent ingredient, you're an Irish producer, and I think that's kind of the essence of what everyone is trying to get across. Do you find it difficult being here, trying to network with the capital?
No. Definitely not Dublin. Dublin is probably the easiest place to get to, would you believe?
Yeah.
I find it tricky, you know. I haven't really gone into the likes of Cork now. They have their own kind of stronghold of black pudding. Mm. So it's, you know, that's fine. I'll tip away at that. But other places, like, I find it's so hard to get anything to Galway or anything. Yeah, just from here, because the road is so crappy and you're kind of going, you have to go up the country and go across, you know, and so I have to use couriers for them kind of things, and that's a pain.
Yeah.
But Dublin is actually the easiest place to get stuff to, would you believe?
Yeah.
So in that sense, I'm lucky, and we're just off the motorway here.
It's a straight road
the whole way, quite monotonous. So bring the chewing gum and the podcast, you know, and listen away. But I can see. The southeast is quite difficult for me as well. I'm only kind of trying to get in there now, so I have my little roots. But I work with Crow's Farm, and they do some of the deliveries for me. So they work Dublin, Cork, Waterford, kind of. Yeah. So I just give them the boxes every week. This driver due to come now shortly, and collect some stuff, and he'll deliver that tomorrow in Dublin. So. And speaking of the devil,
just pulled up. So one last question. Black pudding is such a huge part of a fry up for us. Tell me how you make your perfect fry up.
Oh my God.
I bet it's incredible.
It's not. It's just the same as everybody else. It's all about ingredients.
Yeah.
I use Crow's Farm rashers, class, dry cure, of course. I love dry cure rashers. Una Dwyer sausages, the butcher's daughter in Cashel. She makes all her own sausages. Absolutely unreal. I love the bacon and cheese one that she makes. It's really nice. Really nice. And she does them larger, bigger, small ones. We have Magners for the eggs if we get our hands on them.
Yes.
Magners Farm. And then our own black and white puddings, of course. And then really, like, depends then the time of the year. If you have your own few cherry tomatoes, I throw them under the grill and they're smashing a bit of balsamic dressing on them and... You know, those kind of things. Maybe a poached egg. I might do poached or fried or scrambled, depends, but on the mood of everybody in the house that morning. But yeah, we just do maybe. You know, I do fried breakfast in the evening.
Brenner.
Please say with chips on the side.
Of course.
Yes.
Homemade chips.
Yes.
But I very rarely have a full breakfast in the morning. Mm. I know that sounds mad. You have it in the evening. It's a nice light tea, and it's quick, and it's, you know, you're sorted then for the day, for the evening, you know. So,
I can't believe we ended on Brenner. That's my idea of heaven. It's actually my death row meal. It's Brenner. It's because I love chips, but I also love a fry up, so I can't decide between the two.
He has no shame in that whatsoever.
No.
I love the homemade chips, but the spuds have to be cut nice and thin. Mm-hmm. They have to be tossed in oil and then into the air fryer. I love them that way. Mm-hmm. Rather than the deep fat fryer, I don't use the deep fat fryer because I kind of find it, I hate the smell of it.
Mm.
Especially when I was pregnant, I just had to just throw it out. I just caught it one day and threw it in the bin. I just couldn't stay the smell in it. Yeah. It was just disgusting. So, yeah. So that was it. It's gone from my life about 10 years ago. It's never coming back.
Poor IP.
Yeah.
For more episodes of Chew the Fat, as well as recipes, travel guides, and so much more, you can visit our website at gastrogaze.com. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast wherever you listen to it.